Okay. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to part 8 of the series that we've been doing this term based on the book by Edith Eger called The Gift. And this is the last series of this term and also the last session of this year. This interesting and unique year of 2020. So I wanted to mention it, I'll probably mention it again for those that are coming on a bit late. The new series, after today we're going to take a big break. The new series is going to start 4th of February. However, at Binah we've got a number of learning opportunities throughout the summer. We don't want to leave people without any inspiration or study. One of the things is I'm going to be doing from this coming Monday, Monday to Thursday for 7 weeks, a daily personal growth message, which you can get on WhatsApp. And you need to join a WhatsApp group for that. Some of you have already joined, I know. But I have put on the chat here, if you have a look, I put on the chat if you want to join the group, or how you can do it. So please join the group and stay with us throughout the summer and watch the emails and the videos and so on that we'll be sending out as we go. Okay. So first of all, let's do a little bit of a review and then I'm going to share with you what I want to do today. So last week we did two chapters that dealt with the prison of fear and hopelessness. And we explained that fear has a number of different sources. Often fear is because of fear of failure, which comes from mistaken beliefs. It comes either because we define our own personality. We define ourselves by success and failure. We look at life as the outcome being the only thing that matters, not the effort and the journey that goes with it. Or we define ourselves by the perception of other people. So all of that is, of course, mistaken, and we need to work on those perceptions and those attitudes. But we also talked about legitimate fear. Legitimate fear comes from past traumatic experiences, war, abuse, whatever the experiences are, and that sort of really affects the way we view the future. And that has different strategies. Still, as Edith Eger points out, it's still a choice. It's still, we choose to hang on to fear or to let go. And we do that by changing, first of all, the messages in our own brain. In other words, we reword our own narrative in terms of believing that we can rather than we can't, what we need to do rather than what we need, and so on and so forth. We need to let go of control, because sometimes fear is a way of control, and we need to engage in things like, as we spoke about last week, emunah and bitachon. Belief in God, faith for what happened till now, but trust that it's going to be okay in the future. And of course, living in the moment, take each moment as it comes and live it to the fullest. Which led us to the discussion we had on hopelessness, which is also a choice. But in order to exercise that choice properly, Edith Eger explained very beautifully the difference between the confusion between idealism and hope. In other words, hope doesn't mean that the situation is not complicated. Hope doesn't mean there's a guarantee that everything will turn out 1,000% okay. But it does mean moving forward with hope and with positivity. And it means, as we explained last week, that starting to look at each setback as a part of the journey. We talked about having an eye on the goal, but taking one step at a time. That was the lesson from the tightrope walker. The importance of having a vision, having a goal, having values and goals they want to reach, and of course the idea of living in the moment but not for the moment, as we explained, which means in other words having long-term goals, but then deciding in this moment what can I do now to bring me closer to that goal, but living in this moment, in this time, in this particular experience. Okay, that's just a little review from last time. So today what I want to do is a few things. So first of all, I want to just summarize a little bit what we've looked at in the past 8 weeks. And we'll do that by looking at, just quoting from some of Edith Eger's closing chapter. We haven't, by the way, there's a few chapters in the book we haven't covered. It's because we've covered it elsewhere with lack of time. I recommend people read the book and do it so that's complete and so on. But today I'm going to look at her sort of a closing chapter. Secondly, tonight is Hanukkah, so I also want to connect a lot of what we've talked about to the festival of Hanukkah. And also, thirdly, I want to spend a few moments reflecting on this past year and seeing what we can take away with us. 2020 has been a unique year, let's say that, right? A very, very unique year. And I think what's important is not what kind of year it has been, but what are we going to do about it coming and looking forward. So first of all, let me begin by just going all the way back to the beginning of the book and just quoting something she says at the very beginning, an opening introduction, which is the essence of what we've been doing over the last 8 weeks. And she says, "I'm here to tell you that the worst prison is not the one the Nazis put me in. The worst prison is the one I built for myself. Many of us experience feeling trapped in our minds. Our thoughts and beliefs determine and often limit how we feel, what we do, and what we think is possible." And she says afterwards, she says, "Freedom is a lifetime practice, a choice we get to make again and again each day." So these are the two core principles that she begins with, that the worst prison is the one that we build for ourselves and get trapped in ourselves. And the second one, of course, is that we have a choice to free ourselves from those prisons and to continue to grow. So what we did over the last 8 weeks, we looked at some of those prisons that she talks about, the prism of victimhood, self-neglect, guilt and shame, unresolved grief, rigidity, resentment, and last week, fear and hopelessness. Now, as we keep working on all this, we need to have a look at sort of the ending chapter and draw the inspiration to not just to talk about it for the last 8 weeks, but to actually take it away with us and see what we can do. And as I said, connecting it to Hanukkah, which is tonight, and drawing some inspiration from that as well. So let me read to you, first of all, some of the closing remarks that she makes at the end of the book. She says the following: "We can't take away," because don't forget, the book is called The Gift, and she addresses that in the last chapter. She says, "We can't take away suffering. We can't change what happened. But we can choose to find the gift in our lives. We can even learn to cherish the wound." And she says, "There's an Hungarian adage that says you find the darkest shadow beneath the candle." That in itself is connected to Hanukkah, of course. Candles, flames. "Our darkest and brightest places, our shadows and our flames, are intertwined. My most terrifying night, the first one in Auschwitz, taught me a vital lesson that has enhanced and empowered my life ever since. The very worst circumstances gave me the opportunity to discover the inner resources that helped me again and again to survive. Life, even with its inevitable trauma, pain, grief, and misery and death, is a gift. A gift we sabotage when we imprison ourselves in our fears of punishment, failure, and abandonment, in our need for approval, in shame and blame, in superiority and inferiority, in our need for power and control. To celebrate the gift of life is to find the gift in everything that happens. Even the parts that are difficult, that we're not sure we can survive. To celebrate life, period. To live with joy, love, and passion." Beautiful words, beautiful summary. Then she says something which, for most part, is absolutely true. Of course, as a person with religious conviction, I need to modify a little bit. She says, "I can't say that everything happens for a reason and there's a purpose in injustice or suffering, but I can say that pain, hardship, and suffering are the gift that helps us grow and learn and become who we are meant to be." Now, as I said, let me just pause here and sort of just modify those words a little bit. Because, yes, it's true that things that happen to us, particularly in the area of suffering, is we don't have rational reasons for. We have unanswered questions. We don't ever get the answer. But it's not true to say there's no reason. There is a plan. God has a plan that's part of Emunah. It's a plan that doesn't live in the world of human rationale. But it has a purpose, as she says herself, that we can take those areas of challenge and turn it into a gift to help us grow and learn. So whatever happens in this world, this is part of what we believe, the very core essence of being Jewish, that everything has a purpose, put it that way. Everything has a part in the puzzle of the greater plan that God has, which we don't understand, nor should we understand. And I'll just share with you something which I heard yesterday, which is beautiful. By the way, what I'm going to share with you today, a few things you might hear again in some of the videos or messages which I'm going to be sending out in the next week or two. So I apologize for the revision, but these lessons are always worth hearing twice. But just a few days ago, I heard something beautiful. A few days ago was the Shloshim, the end of the 30-day period for Rabbi Sacks of blessed memory. And in the UK, they had a whole premiered video which they showed. And one of the many speakers was his wife, Elaine Sacks. And she spoke beautifully. It's worth listening to if you can find her on YouTube. But at the end, she says something amazing. She says something quoting from one of Rabbi Sacks' books, who told a story, and he said that there was a rabbi that went through the Holocaust, the Shoah, who was asked by someone, how do you keep your faith? How do you, after everything you've seen, after all the cruelty and the inhumaneness that you've seen, like, how can you still hang on and be focused and have faith? Don't you have any questions? To which the rabbi responded and said, yes, of course I have questions. But I prefer to be down here on earth with the questions than up there in heaven with the answers. Beautiful. In other words, up there in heaven, there might be some answers when you see the bigger picture, but actually we're not supposed to be there. We're supposed to be here. We're supposed to be on this planet as long as we can. And in this world, there often are no answers, nor should we seek them. Nor does God want us to look for the answers. He wants us to have faith, yes, but he doesn't want us to look for answers. So we don't have to have the answers. But we do have to, as Edith Eger says, understand that pain, hardship, and suffering can be a gift sometimes that can help us grow and learn and become who we meant to be. So just to end off some of her quotes, she says the following. She says, I used to ask, why me? But now I ask, why not me? Perhaps I survived so I can choose what to do with what happened and how to be here now. So I can show others how to choose life. So my parents and all the innocents didn't die in vain. So I can turn all the lessons I learned in hell into a gift. I offer you now the opportunity to decide what kind of life you want to have, to discover the untapped potential lying in the shadows, to reveal and reclaim who you really are. These are beautiful words, and what she's really saying is that these prisons that she described in these chapters of this book that we've been discussing over the last 8 weeks, some of them deal with real challenges. Some of them are real challenges. Some of them are real. Some of the fear is real. Some of the hopelessness is real. Some of the perceptions, the attitude comes from legitimate sources. It's all true. Some of the resentment we have perhaps has good foundation. But it's our choice whether we get stuck in our prisons or it's our choice whether we choose to turn them around and use them as a gift to help us live a meaningful and purposeful life, a life of happiness, a life of fulfillment, a life where we can grow and achieve inner happiness and achieve the potential to become who we are supposed to be and what we are supposed to achieve in terms of our values during our life, during our journey down here. And we do that, it takes time, and we need to invest, and we need to focus on a whole concept of growth and how we do that one step at a time. So I want to do that, and I want to take this message, as I said to you before, and I want to connect it to Hanukkah and go through a few things. Hanukkah is a very deep festival. Again, Hanukkah starts tonight. It's a really big mitzvah to kindle the menorah every night after it gets dark. Of course, Shabbat, tomorrow afternoon, we do it before Shabbat comes in. And we know that we are taught by the commentaries that Hanukkah is a very deep festival. Hanukkah is not just a symbolic gesture to remember some sort of historic, miraculous event. But it's supposed to be living a lesson. It's supposed to be produce an energy that we can tap into during the Hanukkah festival. We are taught the 8 days of Hanukkah is a very holy time. And there's no better time, by the way, to engage in the lessons which we've been discussing over the last term. Because Hanukkah has a power. It's a power of light. The power of transforming darkness into light. It's the power of one small candle of light. Of how much a little bit of light, as we know the famous saying, Ma'at or doche harbe min achoshech, a little bit of light can push away much darkness. Right? And also it's the power of transformation. It's the power to be able to take something completely negative and to turn it into something positive. So let's go through a couple of lessons from Hanukkah that we need to take away with us, stay focused on, and internalize so that we can actually free ourselves from our prisons and continue to grow. The first is understanding that Chanukah is 8 days. The number 8 is very significant. It's not just because the miracle took 8 days and the oil lasted for 8 days. The number 8 has meaning and depth, as we've spoken about before. And that is that we are taught in the works of Kabbalah and the commentaries of the Talmud that the number 8 is a miraculous number. It's a number of miracles. And the reason for that is because the number 7 represents the perfection of world, the perfection of nature. As the Maharal of Prague points out, that everything in this world is created by the number 7. We have 7 days to the week. Every object that we have has 7, the top and the bottom, the four sides and the core essence. The world was created in 6 days. Shabbat perfects the world. It elevates the world. But the number 8 is beyond nature. The number 8 transcends nature. The number 8 is a number of miracles. As we know that the halakha is, the Jewish law is, that a brit milah, a circumcision, when it's done on the 8th day, it overrides Shabbat. That even though a brit milah contains and includes things which are prohibited on Shabbat, like drawing blood and so forth, nevertheless it overrides Shabbat. And the reason is because Shabbat is the number 7. It's incredibly important, but it's the perfection of nature, the perfection, the elevation of the world. The brit milah representing the unbreakable, supernatural, transcendent bond that exists between Jew and God is connected more than number 8. It's an eternal, everlasting brit, and therefore overrides the number 7. Chanukah is 8 days because Chanukah teaches us that we have the power of miracles. When we seem to be locked in one of our prisons, when we seem to be trapped in something really complicated or challenging, when we seem to be lost in the darkness of the night, and it seems impossible to break free, it seems impossible to see light, it seems impossible to get rid of resentment or to see hope, one of the inspirations we need to learn from Chanukah is that yes, we can do it, because we are connected to the number 8. We are connected to the number of miracles. How do we do that? Because what is the miracle of Chanukah? And I'm just going to share with you a short idea that the Kabbalists explain. The miracle of Chanukah is that when they went into the temple after the Syrian Greeks had defiled and destroyed much of the temple that was standing at the time, and they wanted to rekindle the soul, they wanted to rekindle the candelabra, the menorah, which resembles the soul, they couldn't find pure oil. All the oil had been defiled, but they could only find the pach echad shel shemen, the one little jug of oil that was still complete, that still had the seal of the Kohen Gadol. And the commentaries explain that all the oil that was defiled in the temple, all the oil that they found that was not usable anymore, represented different parts of our personality, different parts of our makeup, different layers of the soul that we've spoken about so many times that can be impurified, that can be challenged, that can be damaged. And the most deepest parts of the person of the Jewish nation had been damaged. The Syrian Greeks had tried to touch the holiness, the sacredness, the sanctity, the faith of the Jewish people. But how did the miracle happen? How did they find back? How did they fight back? And how do we fight back in our own struggle? We have to connect. We have to believe that we can do it. But how do we do it? What is that miraculous part of who we are? It's the small jug of oil that still has the seal. We all have a small jug of oil that is intact. And that small jar of oil represents that fifth layer, that yechidah, that pintalayid, that spark of our soul that is never and can never be damaged. It's the source of freedom. It's where freedom lives. It's where choice is motivated from. It's where values come from. It's who we really are. It's that little part, the deepest spark in our soul that is always has the seal of the high priest, that is always intact. It is always pure. It is always perfect. And it's that part of our soul that we just have to find, like the Jews did in the times of the temple. And that is what gives us the koyach, the power, to be miraculous and to break free from our own prisons. And that's why we find a very interesting thing with the kindling of the menorah of Chanukah, that the mitzvah, again, apart from Erev Shabbat, the mitzvah of Chanukah candle is specifically when it's dark. One should always try to light the Chanukah candles when the sun is going down, when it's already dark. Which is interesting because since, even though the mitzvah is to remember the miracle that happened with the menorah in the temple, and the menorah in the temple in fact happened was kindled during the day, not at night. But yet the power of Hanukkah represents and directs us to light the Hanukkah candles at night, because the power of Hanukkah, the miraculous power of Hanukkah, is not just to bring light into an experience which is already illuminated. It's not just to perfect that which is already going well, but the power of Hanukkah is to transform the very darkest part of our lives, the very darkest and the most impurest part of who we are. That's the power of Hanukkah. So if we're coming off a discussion of breaking free from the prisons that we create for ourselves, or the prisons that we were put into by ourselves or by our circumstances and experiences, and it seems almost impossible, no better time to reflect on this concept as we go into Hanukkah tonight. Because we have that Pach Echad Shoshem, and we have that jug of oil. We have the power of miracle, which is number 8. And we have the power, therefore, to transform even that which is very dark. And how do we do it? So we do it also by learning from Hanukkah. I apologize, just as we started today's session, there seems to be some major gardening going on just outside my window. So if you hear lawnmower noises, I apologize. How do we do this? So let's learn 5 lessons from Hanukkah of how we do this. 5 lessons. The first one is we do it 1 candle at a time. Yes, we are ambitious and we have goals, but 1 candle at a time. I think I said this out yesterday on a video, so apologies if you heard it already. But I've written about this as well. This is a really important lesson we learned from Hanukkah. The traditional way of doing Hanukkah candles already from centuries and centuries is to light a Hanukkiah, the Hanukkah menorah. And tonight when we light the first candle, it's a very empty menorah, very empty. We light 1 candle, but there's 7 empty spaces. And almost looks empty. You know, it looks beautiful on the last night of Hanukkah when it's all full and burning brightly. But tonight when we light the first candle, it's going to look very empty. But there's a very important lesson there. And the lesson is that tonight we light 1 candle. We see the empty menorah because we see there's more to do. We see there's a goal, there's a miraculous goal, there's 8 spaces, 8 lamps. But we don't try fill them all tonight because we can't. Because growth, as miraculous as it is, must come 1 step at a time. We must do 1 thing at a time beyond our comfort zone. We must light 1 small candle at a time, light up our soul 1 candle at a time. We must know that there's much more to do. We must see the goal. We must look at all empty, 7 empty lamps. But tonight we just light 1 candle. And it's the combination of that, of those 2 things, that sets us on that journey. Knowing there's more to do, but doing 1 thing at a time, and then tomorrow night doing more. So the 1 candle at a time, 1 small step at a time, 1 greater happiness at a time, 1 time letting, 1 step in letting go of resentment, of overcoming fear, and so on and so forth. The second is learning a lesson from the candle itself. And this is particularly from a Jewish perspective, of course, that we need to remember that the pasuk, the verse in Tanakh, compares the candle to the soul. Ner Hashem Nishmat Adam. The candle of God is the soul of the human being. That as we grow, as we let go of our prisons, as we break free, as we choose freedom, as we pursue internal and inner happiness, we can only do it with and not forget about the soul. Spirituality, values. We have to move forward, not just to let go of resentment, not just to let go of fear, not just to let go of our ego or rigidity, whatever the case might be, but we have to replace it with something valuable, something of meaning, something spiritual. Prayer, study, a mitzvah, kindness, generosity, something that has spiritual significance, because growth and inner happiness can only come together with values, meaning, and purpose. So from a Jewish point of view, the ultimate values is connecting to something beyond us, connecting to God through the moral compass that He gave us, through His mitzvot, through His commandments of kindness and compassion, through the study of His value system, which is the Torah, and educating ourselves and filling up our soul with richness and meaning and purpose. That's the second lesson. The third lesson I want to share with you comes from a very interesting law with regard to Hanukkah, and it's about how we define success. It's how we don't give up hope, even when we try. Let me give you a bit of context here. Every night of Hanukkah, we're supposed to light the Hanukkah candles with oil or candles, either one. Some people like to do it with olive oil, but whatever the case is, as long as there's something burning, as long as there's a wick and there's oil, wax, or whatever the case is. And we're supposed to light it in such a way that it burns for a particular amount of time. So when we light it after dark, it's got to burn for a half an hour after dark. That's the mitzvah. In other words, if I just lit a match, or I lit with a tiny bit of oil that's going to go out of after 5 minutes, that's not the mitzvah, and I haven't fulfilled my obligation for Hanukkah. Okay. So the Talmud discusses a dispute of what happens if I took the Hanukkah menorah tonight, I lit the first candle, there was enough oil or enough wax to last the amount of time, there was no particular wind around, I put it in a safe place, and the way I lit it was legitimate, it was correct, and it was, by all laws of nature, going to burn the right amount of time. I did, I took all the precautions. And then 3 minutes later, something unexpected happened, an unexpected wind, someone knocks into it, a loose screw on the table and it fell down, whatever the case is, it wasn't burning properly, whatever the case is, and it went out. Kafta, it went out, lechabot. So the Talmud discusses this halachic problem. Kafta zakukla or eino zakukla. Which means, if the Hanukkah candles go out, am I required to relight it or not to relight it? On the one hand, it's understood. The whole hal mitzvah is it's supposed to burn for the half an hour. So if it goes out after 5 minutes, surely I should relight it. But there's another view that says, no, the mitzvah is to light the candle. You did it. You've done what you can. And what happens afterwards, don't worry. What is the law? What is the halakha? How do we rule? We rule kafta en zakukla, which means if the Hanukkah candles go out, we do not need to rekindle it. You can if you want to, and if it's not Shabbat, many people do if it happens. They want to see the Hanukkah candles so they can relight it, but you don't have to. If it goes out, as long as you did the correct thing and you put the correct amount of oil or wax and you lit it in the correct space and so on and so forth, you made the blessing, you did what you need to do, if it goes out, you do not need to relight it. And the lesson, I think, in that law is amazing. Because so often as we grow, so often as we light one candle at a time, we give up because we think it's not working. We put in the effort, we put the precautions, and it didn't work today. I put everything in place that I should not be upset, that I should not be resentful, that I should be more flexible. And I don't know what happened, but something took place and it just didn't work. And I give up hope and I said, well, if that's the case, I haven't done any mitzvah. It's not worth it. Why do I bother trying? I'm just going to give up. Comes along the Talmud and says, no, the mitzvah is not that it should keep burning. Of course, the idea is it should keep burning, but that's not the mitzvah. Your mitzvah is to put everything in place. Your mitzvah is to invest. Your mitzvah is to light your candle today with the right amount of oil in the right place, putting in the right investment and effort. That is success. When you've lit the candle, you have been successful. If you lit the candle, that was supposed to do the trick, you have succeeded. If it ends up not doing the trick from some other external unexpected interference, you've still done the mitzvah. You still have succeeded. Success is the effort I put in. Success isn't always, of course, I've got to reach a goal. Of course, I'm working towards a goal. But today it went out. I'll write it again tomorrow. It went out, but I've still succeeded. Because I took one step closer to the direction. I put in the effort. Every effort we make in the area of personal growth is amazing. Every time we put in the effort, every time we make one little dent, maybe it only burned for 1 minute. It didn't work for the whole half an hour. Of course, it was supposed to, and the way I set it up, it should have. But it didn't. I've still done a mitzvah. I've still created something amazing. I've still made a dent in my own personal prison, which will make it tomorrow easier for me to go out of that prison. Kafta ein zakugla. If it goes out, you don't have to relight it. You are still successful. An incredibly important lesson from the candles of Hanukkah. Third lesson. Fourth lesson. We know that one of the greatest things of Hanukkah candles is the publicity of the miracle, which is why, and I'm sure you've seen them around, people sometimes drive around with cars with menorahs on top. There's public menorah lightings, relat menorah in shul, and so on and so forth. All good, all very important. But comes along the Talmud and the Code of Jewish Law and says, the mitzvah of Hanukkah candles at the end of the day is not about the public lighting. The mitzvah of Hanukkah candle is neir ish ubeito. Every house has to have candles. If I go to shul, or I go to Martin Place, or I go to a park, and I participate, which I should, and it's a beautiful thing to do, in the spirit of Hanukkah, and I go with other people, and we encourage each other, and we have Jewish pride, and we witness the lighting, and I went there, and I heard the brachot being made, and I ate donuts, and whatever I did, I haven't fulfilled the mitzvah. When I come home, I've got to make sure my house has a menorah. My house has the candles burning. Because spiritual growth, freeing ourselves from our own prison, choosing freedom, growing spiritually, cannot be delegated. It's not a communal responsibility. We are responsible for ourselves. We make that choice. It cannot be delegated, it cannot be shifted, it cannot be blamed, it cannot be put onto anyone else. Yes, of course, as we'll see later, of course we have to inspire each other. Of course, the changes that we make of ourselves will also have an effect on other people, as I'll soon share with you a story about that. But we, and we only, have to make that change. The choice is ours, not the communities, not the parks, not the organizations, not the shuls. Our responsibility to make that choice. Our house. Our house must become a place of inspiration. Our own home must become a place of freedom, a place of light, a place of enthusiasm, a place of passion. It is our choice. It cannot be delegated to anyone else. Ner ish ubeito. It's got to be, each person has to be given, has to take that responsibility themselves to free themselves from their own prison and to grow in their own way. And finally, the fifth lesson, I mean, there's many more lessons, but the fifth lesson I wanted to highlight is of, yes, as I started with the lesson that we do one candle at a time, but we cannot do the same amount of candles each day. Ma'alin ba'kodesh, each day we have to add a small candle, but an adding, an addition. That we say, ma'alin ba'kodesh, we light one small candle on the first day, but and a second, two small candles on the second day, three small candles on the fourth day. Every day we have to grow. Every day, only one step, but we have to take one step, light one small candle. And that is the path, and that is the journey towards the number eight, towards achieving a miraculous experience, towards really going beyond ourselves, towards really experiencing and choosing and freeing ourselves from our own prison. So those are five lessons. Let me just summarize from the concept of Hanukkah. One candle at a time. See the empty menorah. Look at the goal, but one candle at a time. Bring your soul along in the journey. Focus on soul stuff, values, spirituality, Torah study, mitzvot, and so on. Define success by the effort, not by the outcome and the result. Kafta ein zakukla. If it goes out, you don't have to rely on it. The mitzvah is still there, as long as everything was in place. Number four, you cannot delegate it. It is our. We all have that ability. We all have the miracle. We all have that small jug of oil. We all have the ability to grow ourselves. It cannot be done for us. We must do it in our home, at our door, at our window. And of course, we only do one candle at a time, but ma'alin ba'kodesh, we have to light one extra candle every day. These are powerful lessons. As I've mentioned in previous years, the previous Rebbe said, the previous Lubavitch Rebbe would say, when you light candles, there's a custom to sit by the candles for a little bit, not just to light them and walk away, but to sit next to them, study something, play dreidel, whatever, eat latkes, donuts, whatever the case is. But why do we sit next to the candles? So the previous Rebbe would say that when we light the Hanukkah candles, we have to tune in. I'll say it in Yiddish first. He says, Midaf zuheren was die lichterlach der zeilen. We have to tune in and to listen to the stories and the lessons that the candles communicate to us, the candles tell. And I feel that all of this, all of these lessons, and this comes to the third part that I wanted to touch today, all these lessons, all these things are so incredibly important every year, but especially this year. And I want to pause for a moment and spend a few minutes on reflection because it's the last session of 2020. And as we said, 2020 has been a very unique year. in many ways a very challenging year. Thank God in this country we are incredibly blessed, but nevertheless, it hasn't been without its challenges. Many challenges for many people. Loneliness, mental health, financial, family stuff, just a lot of challenges. And the challenges continue all over the world. God should help us that over here we should be spared, as we have been to a great degree. But it's been a challenging year. And it's a year we all want to see go. It's an experience we all want to see the end of. But there's so much that we can learn from this year, as we mentioned before. And I am scared, I fear, and I'm sure many of you do also, that we shouldn't waste this year. It shouldn't be a year that we waste it. But rather it should be a year that we take, like Edith Eger says in her book, that we turn it into a gift. Because I already sort of see that people are slipping back into just some of the normal stuff, the normal routine, with all its disadvantages sometimes, as we had before, and we cannot let that happen. And as I was thinking about this a few days ago, I thought about a story in the Talmud, which I want to share with you. And the story of the Talmud says the following. Let me give you the context. There was a great sage whose name was Rabbi Elisha ben Avuya, a great Torah sage, who unfortunately, a very unique situation, very rare occurrence, he left the pathway of Judaism. He became a heretic. And he became known as Acher. Acher means someone else. He was someone else. But he was known, he was referred to as Acher. I've mentioned him before. I've told the story before. Acher had a student, and that student was Reb Meir. Reb Meir was his student from before, when he was still known as Reb Elisha ben Avuya. He was a very close student to him, and Reb Meir, the great Reb Meir, Reb Meir was an amazing sage. He learned a lot of Torah from this Acher. And even when Acher became a heretic and he left the pathway of Jewish observance and he became an outlier, so to speak, Reb Meir continued to learn Torah from him. And the Talmud asks a question, the Talmud says, how could Reb Meir do that? We have a principle that one should learn. Torah is not just an academic subject. Torah is a Torah of values, it's a Torah of spirituality, it's a Torah of divine connection. It says when you learn from someone Torah, it shouldn't only be someone who's smart and clever, it should be someone that is pure and practices what he preaches and is a holy person and is of great stature, whatever the case is. So the Gemara questions, the Talmud questions, how could Reb Meir continue to learn Torah from Acher? And the Talmud says, maybe it's not for everyone, but Reb Meir was okay to do that. Why was Reb Meir okay to do that? Because Reb Meir possessed a very unique ability. He knew how to treat his interaction with Acher similar to eating a pomegranate, says the Talmud. What do you mean eating a pomegranate? He says, when you eat a pomegranate, tocha ochal v'klipato zarak. He ate the inside, the nourishing inside, and threw away the shell, which is not edible. He knew how to differentiate between the fruit and the shell. He knew how to eat the fruit with all its nutritious benefits and beautiful taste and throw away the shell. And this Talmud sort of came to my mind a few days ago because I was thinking about this. And I was thinking about this year. That on the one hand, we have this strong pull, the strong sort of attitude and mindset. Let's just this year disappear. With Corona, with everything, just goodbye. And let's just go back to normal. On the other hand, this year, there's so many things that we've learned this year. How do we hang on to it? And the answer is that we need to be like Reb Meir. We need to be like Reb Meir and understand, yes, it was a challenging year. And there are parts of this year that we never want to see again. But we need to treat this year, we need to understand that we have within our ability, for this case at least, we have Reb Meir's ability of eating a pomegranate, throwing away the peel and eating the fruit. Yes, we need to discard part of this year because part of this year was one big shell that was negative. And we need to throw it away and ask God to throw it away and never to see it again. But there has been beneath that shell this year, there's been an amazing, nutritious fruit. Beautiful tasting pomegranate peel of seeds that we have to eat and not throw away. If we throw away the whole pomegranate, we've wasted an opportunity. And I think part of what we need to do is we need to learn the lessons of Hanukkah. take some of the inspirations away with us and take it with us. Put into place. Make a list. I'm doing this. I urge everyone to do this. Before the end of this calendar year. Not that the calendar year is that significant, in terms of spiritual, we go by Rosh Hashanah, but nevertheless, it's a milestone. It is the end of the year, it's the end of a cycle. Make a list of the things that we've learned. Make a list of the things that this year has taught us, the values that this year has taught us, the things that this year has taught us, the precious things that this year has given us, and put it up on a fridge, put it up in a book, put it on a desk, and look at it every few days. And then go back to the Chanukah lessons, go back to Edith Eger's lessons, and let's not be trapped. Let's not waste this year. It's such an important thing. We really need to have the fruit of the pomegranate stay with us, and yes, discard the peel and let it go. I mean, just to give you an example, there's so many things, but I just quickly made a list myself. For example, there's so many things that so many people learned this year. First of all, value-based living. This year has been a year where people were forced, especially in the months where we really were stuck at home, we were forced to look at our values and look at what's really important. Relationships, spirituality, soul stuff, and so on and so forth. We had to re-examine what does certainty mean. We've talked about this a lot throughout the year. That we know that we've understood that life is not certain, but there is one thing that is certain, our values. We have to shift from the world of uncertainty to the world of certainty and not give certainty, not misplace certainty, not give certainty to where it doesn't belong. We have to learn to give up control. As we've been taught this year, we're not in control. Let's not slip into the mode of being in control again. We're not in control. Let's have 2021 also understanding it's going to be an amazing year. But let's not be so arrogant. Let's understand we're not in control. Let's learn to let go. Let's learn to give up control. Let's give time as we did this year. I think I shared this with you. But I saw this, especially this past Rosh Hashanah. When I walked the streets with my son and blowing shofar for people and visiting people's homes and stopping people in the streets, I saw the Jewish soul burning, alive, like the Hanukkah candles. People were searching, people were looking, people were happy to stop in the middle of an intersection and hear the shofar. There's something about the Jewish soul this year that got kindled that maybe wasn't there before. Let's keep it burning. Let's spend time this coming year. Let's give time to nurture our soul. Let's give time to make our soul burn brightly at the Hanukkah candles. Let's give time for spiritual growth, whether it's an extra shiur, whether it's learning something, whether it's just examining our spiritual growth, maybe taking on another mitzvah, whatever the case might be. Which, of course, goes together with another concept that we learned this year, which people stopped, slowed down, and gave time to reflect. As we call in Hebrew, cheshbon ha-nefesh. Let's not go back into the treadmill of life and never stop and think. Let's set aside each week time to stop. How's my week going? How's my values being achieved this week? Have I given this week meaning and purpose? Let's learn to notice things as we did this year. Many people were awakened to notice loneliness, to experience loneliness, and to notice other people that are lonely. Let's not go back into our own absorbed self and forget about people who might still be lonely. A lot of mental health issues have been noticed this year. Awareness. We need to keep doing that. It's still around. It's still very prevalent. Let's notice people around us. Let's reach out to people. Let's ask them if they're okay. Let's create more awareness about these areas. And let's try to bring out the best in ourselves and in others. This year we saw so many amazing stories of people rising to the occasion. We saw so many stories of how challenge can bring out strengths, can bring out weaknesses too. It can bring out the worst in people too. But it's brought out amazing things within people. Let's not wait for challenge. Let's just take those amazing things and take this forward into the future. As the fruit, let go the peel, but take the fruit with you. So this is just some of the things. There's so many, but I wanted to highlight this here because I know that, normally I don't sort of focus that much on the new year or whatever the case is. For me, the new year is Rosh Hashanah, but it is the end of a term. It's the end of a cycle. It's the end of a calendar year, whether we like it or not. That's the way that's the way society works. And it's a really good time to stop and think. People are going on holiday. People are going to have a lot of time in the next few weeks. They're having holiday at home or elsewhere. It's a time to reflect, a time to really think. And I think it's just an important thing, because let's not make 2020 a waste of a year. Let's throw away the peel, but let's take away the fruit. And when we do that, let's do it like the Hanukkah candles. Because the Hanukkah candles, we light in our own homes, but we light it next to a window, next to a door, and it illuminates others as well. Yes, it's our responsibility, but when we change, we inspire other people as well. So let's each change in our own path, in our own way, but let's inspire each other and strengthen each other. And with that, I want to finish with a story that I read as a child, and I was just thinking about it yesterday, and I Googled it. Today you can find things easily, so I Googled it and I came up with a story and I reminded myself of the story. It's a beautiful story, and I'm going to share it with you with a bit of a lesson. With that, we're going to finish. So, just a bit of context. In the early days of the great Tzaddikim after the Baal Shem Tov, Baal Shem Tov himself was known as to be a great Tzaddik and someone who often displayed ability to transcend nature, to do things which were just openly miraculous. And this was true of many Tzaddikim and really Kabbalists and many great Hasidic leaders and so on. And it's in that context that I tell you the story. So, the story takes place in the court of Reb Baruch of Mezhibuz. Reb Baruch of Mezhibuz was a great tzaddik. He was a grandson of the Baal Shem Tov. And it was the first night of Chanukah. And the custom among many Hasidic rebbes is that each person lights Chanukah candles in their own home and then come to the shul of the Rebbe and he waits for them and then he lights his own Chanukah candles in the presence of the Hasidim. They light the candles, they sing, they share words of Torah and so on and so forth. And as you know, in the Northern Hemisphere, Chanukah is in the winter. And it was a very, very freezing, snowy night. And Reb Baruch of Mezhibuz stood there in front of the menorah, surrounded by the big crowd of his Hasidim. He recites the blessing, the three blessings which were recited on the first night. His face is radiating with joy. And they are looking at him perform this mitzvah. He lights the candle and they start to sing. Hanera talalu ma'os tzur. And all of a sudden, the candle began to flicker. There was no wind, no breeze, but it started to flicker. It started to dance or struggle, and it disappeared. It didn't blow out because there was no smoke. It just wasn't there anymore. It's as if the flame had flown away. The shamash, his attendant, rushed over and wanted to rekindle it, even though, as we said before, you don't have to, but he wanted to rekindle it. Reb Baruch put up his hand and said, "Don't worry." He motioned his Hasidim to continue to sing, and they started to sing one song after another. He stopped with intervals, and he shared insights, and he shared inspiration, he shared Torah. And they almost forgot about the whole candle. They got so absorbed in the experience. Suddenly, it was close to midnight when they heard a harsh screech of a carriage grating on the snow in the courtyard outside the shul. The door burst open, and in came a Hasid, who had come from a distant village. His appearance was shocking. His clothes were torn. He looked filthy. His face was bleeding. It was a terrible sight. He sat down and Reb Baruch motioned to him and he started to speak. And he's telling his story. He said the following. He said, "This isn't the first time I've come to Mezhibuz through the root of the forest. I know the way very well. I know the safe ways. There was a storm this week. And I really wanted to come and I was afraid the storm would delay me in reaching the Rebbe for Chanukah. But I wanted to so desperately be by Reb Baruch for Chanukah. So I decided not to wait out the storm, but to just travel ahead by day, by night and to keep going. And that was a silly idea, I admit, because last night," he said, "I ran into a gang of bandits who thought that the only person that could be traveling like this in a carriage must be someone wealthy. They attacked me, they bound me up and they demanded my money. I explained to them, I have no money. I'm on the way to the Rebbe for Hanukkah. They didn't believe me, so they took me to their gang leader. For a whole day, they wouldn't believe me, and I tried, and I'm begging them. And earlier tonight, they finally let me go because the gang leader said to me, 'I see from the way you're talking and the way you're longing to go to your teacher, your Rebbe, for Hanukkah, it looks like you're telling the truth. But I'm going to let you go and keep going, but I know that you probably won't make it there. Because no one travels by night alone during this in this forest, in this route that I'm showing you to take. It's the most dangerous way. And I'm telling you that if you make it there, it's a sign you're telling the truth. And if you make it there, I will change my ways.' And he said, 'When you get towards the end of the forest, there's a river there. One of my men are going to be there. Drop your handkerchief next to the river. I'll know you reach there. I promise you, I will change my ways.' So he set out and the horse wouldn't budge. He whips the horse and the horse is not moving. It's dark. I'm terrified. I've nowhere to go. Suddenly, says this Chassid, at that moment, a small light flickered in front of the carriage. The horse stepped eagerly towards the light. The light kept on moving. The horse kept on following the light until we arrived in the courtyard just outside. And as he was finishing the story, the Hasidim looked up and looked around and they saw that the flame of Reb Baruch's menorah has suddenly returned. I tell you the story because it's obviously it was a miraculous story, but it's a reminder that our Hanukkah candle is also miraculous. The Hanukkah candle that we light tonight with all its lessons of one candle at a time, of having the miraculous nature, of having that one little jug of oil within ourselves, looking at the empty menorah, one candle at a time, understanding that it's our personal responsibility, the Hanukkah candle is very, very powerful. The lessons of this year are very powerful. The lessons we learned in the book are very powerful. We need to take them with us. And we need to learn the strategy from the candles of the Hanukkah. We need to listen to the stories that the Hanukkah candles tell us and take it away and make concrete decisions of how we can take one step at a time, one candle at a time, to grow, to free ourselves from our own prison. But we also need to realize that when we do that, it's not just ourselves we're helping. Just like Reb Baruch, in our own small way, we're not on the level of Rabbi Baruch, but our own small way, our Hanukkah candles is not only powerful for ourselves, but when we light a candle of our soul, when we change, we're also creating inspiration for other people around us. When we each do it and we do it together and we each light our own candle, we each guide each other out of the forest, out of danger, out of the darkness, out of the challenge, towards greater light and towards a pathway and a proper direction. So that's the lesson, I think, that we've learned over this term, and that's the lessons of Hanukkah, and that's the lessons of that story. I just wanted to, before we finish, just go back to what I said in the very, very beginning. Some of you weren't on. I just want to say this is the last session of this year. But what we are doing is we have different things happening throughout the summer, the next 7 weeks. One of them is I'm going to be sharing, I've pre-recorded a lot of them already. I'm going to be sharing WhatsApp small messages every day, Monday to Thursday, personal growth messages. It'll be on a WhatsApp group, besides the videos, which I'll continue to send out. But if you, I put in the chat, or just watch all the emails, I put in the chat how you can join that WhatsApp group to receive those quick daily messages that I'll send out Monday to Thursday each week over the next 7 weeks. There are other stuff happening as well. Please watch all the emails. So please join us. Don't remain 7 weeks without any inspiration, or do your own reading or own learning, whatever the case is. And I know we're not in person, but I wanted to just take this opportunity, first of all, to thank all those that have joined us through this period on Zoom and been with us in this journey. But also thank you again for another special, special year. As I always tell you, the Thursday mornings is the highlight of my week. It's where I learn to grow and I take the energy and inspiration from. Your candle inspires my candle, and hopefully we inspire each other. And I want to wish everyone just a nice break and a great, healthy summer, an inspiring summer. But we'll keep in touch, Emirat Hashem, and we're going to be starting this Thursday morning on February 4th. But important announcement, please watch the emails, because we're actually, hopefully next year, if things continue the way they are, we're going to probably keep it on. We might keep the opportunity for those who want to do it still on Zoom, but we are going to come back. We need to connect in the real at some level, so we'll make a plan to come back properly. So have a wonderful day, a wonderful week, Shabbat Shalom, and a wonderful summer.
Thank you, Rabbi.
You're very welcome.
Thank you, Rabbi.
All the best, everyone. All the best.
Thank you.
All the best. Thank you very much.
Thanks. Shabbat Shalom and Chag Sameach.
To you too. Chag Sameach.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. All the best.